Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us. From BetterHomesAndGardens.com, this is the vibrant fall flower everyone will be decorating with this season. These striking blooms are taking over fall arrangements by Sophia Beams. Joanna Gaines made Ranunculus the flower of the spring season, while Taylor Swift's late summer engagement had everyone swooning over hundreds of fluffy roses. And while we're absolutely obsessed with mums for your fall porch display, what about the absolute best flower for all your fall arrangements? We're picking a flower that's a showstopper through and through, the beloved dahlia. When you picture a dahlia, dozens of different shapes, colors, and sizes likely come to mind. Dahlias are renowned for their never-ending varieties. Much like roses, dahlias can come in almost any flower form you desire. Here, we're deep diving into all things dahlias and how to keep them thriving this season. Fall dahlias. Fall dahlias are arguably most common. They're perfectly spherical flowers with petals shaped like little tubes. These are the type of flowers you'd probably see winning first place at your local county fair during the fall. Their tall, thin stems make them look as though they're floating high above their delicate green leaves. In a vase, ball dahlias look so effortlessly perfect that they almost seem fake. It's fun to arrange a dozen of them at once in a single vase, cut at varying heights so that they all burst out of the top at different angles. Informal decorative dahlias. Because there are so many dahlias to love, they have quite the naming category. Informal decorative dahlias refers to a broad category of dahlias that don't have that symmetrical look to them. Instead, their petals are fluffy, twisty, and don't form that perfectly ball-like shape that other dahlias do. Informal decorative dahlias are particularly beautiful when styled with other flowers. Use just 1 to 3 large informal dahlias with smaller additions like spray roses, cosmos, eucalyptus, or larkspur. The dahlias will take center stage and look especially lush against small filler flowers. Arranging your dahlias. It's always a great idea to arrange multiple types of dahlias together. Try mixing the shapes, sizes, and colors of the dahlias you choose for your arrangement to create an autumnal display that naturally complements each other. Ensure that you cut them at varying lengths and stagger them by height for a bouquet that appears to be freshly picked from the garden. For fall, opt for darker, moodier colors like burgundy, dusty orange, and deep purple. Help your dahlias stand out more by adding in a few lighter colors to balance things out. Gradient peach, light yellow, or blush pink dahlias add dimension. If you're looking for a lighter arrangement, soft orange, butter yellow, and blush pink also go well together. And for a subtle mix of colors, choose dahlias of the same gradient. Dahlias with purple centers and white tips are common, as are fiery red dahlias that turn yellow at the ends of their petals. Local tips. The dahlias available at your local grocery store or florist will likely vary by location and season. It's best to go in with an open mind. The flowers you get can even change by week. Choose a few general color palettes you think you'd like and work from there. Keeping dahlias alive. When cut, the lifespan of your dahlias can vary significantly. The secret is to purchase them as fresh as possible. Visit your local farmers' markets, roadside flower stands, or buy straight from the farm to guarantee you get them as close to harvest as possible. One method of making your dahlias last longer is to cut the stems at an angle, then dip the ends into boiling water for about 30 seconds. Place them in a vase filled with water, removing any leaves that touch the water. You'll need to change the water out at least every other day. You can also try keeping your dahlias in the fridge overnight to prolong their lifespan and be sure to keep them out of direct sunlight. Ball dahlias are often said to last the longest. As a bonus, they also dry quite well, even when kept in a vase, so they might stick around for longer than you think. From the November issue of Sun Lake Splash, Plant Wisely by Dennett Hunnell. It's planting season this month here in Sun Lakes. Let's talk about what you probably don't want to plant. Mexican petunia. With its green, soft leaves and small purple petunia-looking blooms, this is an ultra-easy and not bad-looking bush. However, The Mexican petunia is a bully. Once it has established itself, it will take over your yard. It chokes out other plants. It travels underground. You will find it popping up all over your yard. It will even go under block fences and pop up in your neighbor's yard. You can kill it over and over again and pull it up from the ground, but it will come back in another location. Again, it's easy. Just plant it and forget it. It can live in terrible soil, go without water, and withstand the super sun, but it carries a vengeance that many cannot manage. Bamboo. Bamboo is a nice green curtain between you and your neighbors. It will get thick, dense, and quite tall. It is fast growing, but like the Mexican petunia, it is quite hard to eliminate once established. You can cut it way down and it will come back. You can go without feeding it food or water and it will live and prosper. Plus, it's a wonderful place for critters and bugs to live, so it can become messy and noisy. Oleander. Personally, I love oleanders and have 8 of the petite pink varietal in my own yard. I like petite because they do not get more than 5 feet tall, and the pink ones will flower the most often. The reds seldom bloom, and the white will bloom only occasionally. Look along the south side of Riggs Road and see the huge 20-plus-foot-tall white oleanders. They are not bullies. They won't choke out and run over your other plants, but they are practically impossible to get rid of, and they are dirty. Lawn vacuums are needed as the petals fall and blow around abundantly, especially after wind and rain. When the little petals are wet, they tend to stick to sidewalks, pavers, etc. Oleanders are toxic to animals and can cause itching, and they are survivors requiring little care, and they are here for your lifetime. So plant wisely. From Phoenix Home and Garden Magazine, Twisted Myrtle, what makes this evergreen stand out? Lush green foliage and a whimsical form make this evergreen a standout in landscapes, by John Rourke. Friends who know my garden often ask me how my Dr. Seuss tree is growing, says landscape architect Greg Trutza of the prized Twisted Myrtle in his own backyard. It could certainly look like something he would have illustrated. It is guaranteed to be the first shrub your eyes will be drawn to focus upon. Trutza incorporates the plant into a wide variety of landscape styles, and it often becomes his client's favorite feature. Twisted Myrtle is pure delight to the eye all year round, whether in xeriscape plantings or in more verdant settings of both contemporary and traditional styles. The true beauty of this remarkable plant is as a standalone accent specimen. This species originates from the Mediterranean and thus also grows well here in the Southwest. A member of the eucalyptus family, it has a refreshing smell when the leaves are crushed and contains a type of oil that helps it survive our sun exposure. The evergreen foliage provides beauty, sustenance, and shelter all seasons as the white flowers attract pollinators and the non-toxic berries are a delight for birds. The plant can be used in large pots with adequate root space and drainage. However, they do best when they can grow their roots deeply in the earth to weather the extremes of our climate. Twisted Myrtle can be used as a screen planting to hide an area of the yard or view, in which case it should be minimally pruned. But many are unaware of this shrub's inner beauty waiting to be revealed by selectively choosing the main trunks to be exposed by artful pruning, Trutza raves. Left untouched, it becomes a dense green amorphous shape with the leaves growing close to the stems. I sometimes defer pruning until prior to the holidays to utilize the branches for a long-lasting display reminiscent of greens grown back east, Trutza continues. The trimmings are stunning in a vase on their own or with blooms of your choice. Also from Phoenix Home and Garden Magazine, growing grapes in the desert may be easier than you think. When contemplating a cultivating fruit-bearing plant in the Valley of the Sun, grapes may not be the first thing that comes to mind. However, the juicy berries, yes, grapes are berries, are an excellent choice. Their fruit is tasty, their leaves provide lush greenery for your landscape, and the plants are well adapted to the harsh conditions of the Phoenix metropolitan area. When selecting grape plants to grow in Arizona, there are two types to consider, European and American. European varieties, including Thompson seedless, Flame seedless, Exotic, Cardinal, and Ruby seedless, perform best in the valley and other locations below 4,500 feet elevation. Hot summers and moderate winters suit them just fine. American grapes such as Concord, Reliance, Himrud Seedless, Niagara, and Campbell's Early do better at higher elevations, about 4,500 feet, and have greater cold hardiness than their European counterparts. Because different species have different uses, from table grapes to wine grapes and flavors, it's also important to research which ones are best for your end goal, be it fresh fruit, raisins, juice, jelly, or simply landscape greenery. Site preparation. Grapes are picky when it comes to their soil and site location. Their root systems can extend 3 to 4 feet into the ground, so deep soil with good drainage is essential. Avoid planting vines in low-lying basins as they prefer good air circulation. They will also need full sun and plenty of room to grow up and outward. In order to grow outward, your plants will need some sort of support, the most common being a post with attached fencing or wires. Posts should be spaced 6 to 8 feet apart with a vine planted at each post. Vine purchase. Vines are usually sold bare root or in containers or bags. Winter is bare root season as vines are dormant and have not begun to sprout. Select the most robust plants, making sure the vines are pliable with no developing buds. Keep roots moist until planting time. Containerized plants are available in the spring. They should be robust with an abundance of new growth. Roots coming out of drainage holes could indicate a pot-bound plant and should be avoided. Planting. The best time to plant grapes is in early spring after the last frost. For bare root plants, prune any broken roots. The planting hole should be twice as wide as the root system and at least 2 feet deep. Build a soil cone in the bottom of the hole over which you will spread the roots. If you're planting containerized grape plants, do not remove the potting soil when planting. Backfill using your native soil, making sure the vine is at the same depth as it was at time of purchase. Water thoroughly, but do not add fertilizer, soil amendments, or root stimulators for the first year. You will not water again until new growth appears. Spread mulch around the vine as a top dressing. If your vines have multiple canes, year-old shoots that have developed a visible bark layer and dropped most of their leaves, it is imperative to remove all but the most vigorous-looking one, cut the remaining cane back to 2 buds, and then leave the vines alone for the first summer so as to produce a strong root system for future vine development. Because grapes have a deep root system, water your plants slowly, deeply, and infrequently, about every 7 to 10 days. Grapes also respond well to drip irrigation. Winter water is unnecessary unless rains are scarce. Let your vines grow for at least 3 years before trying to harvest fruit. A fertilizer program is not necessary until about the 3rd year, at which time you can apply 10 ounces of 10-10-10 fertilizer to each plant yearly. Double that amount at about the 6-year mark. Pests. There are 2 species of insect pests that cause huge problems for Arizona-grown grapes. The western grape leaf skeletonizer larvae do exactly what their name implies. They eat grape leaves, leaving the veins behind. They can be controlled with applications of BT applied as a spray according to label directions. Grape leafhoppers, both nymphs and adults, suck the sap from leaves, causing the foliage to become discolored and even stunted and curled. These minuscule yellowish-green bugs can be treated with insecticidal soaps such as Safer. Non-insect nuisances can also damage or destroy grapevines and fruits. A chalky white fungus known as powdery mildew initially appears as whitish lesions on the leaves and progresses to dark patches on canes and shoots and dead leaves. Infected berries will darken and shrivel. It can be treated with a fungicide such as Sulfur. If birds become a problem, the only recourse is covering the plants with netting. Grapevines should be trained and pruned carefully in order to produce abundant fruit. The University of Arizona Cooperative Extension has a publication called Growing Grapes in the Home Garden, available to download at extension.arizona.edu/sites/extension.arizona.edu/files/pubs/az1657-2015.pdf. It features detailed information on training and pruning vines to achieve a bountiful harvest of table grapes. Grapes are a fun addition to any desert setting. Plant some this month, and soon your yard will boast eye-catching plants with bold foliage, sculptural branching, and best of all, colorful and tasty fruit that will be enjoyed by all members of the family. And taking a look at current and upcoming events at Desert Botanical Garden, Frame Rate Desert Pulse, now through May 10th of next year. Desert Pulse, a multi-sensory art exhibit by ScanLab Projects, immerses visitors in the visual and emotional energy of the Sonoran Desert. Cactus Clubhouse, Thursdays through Sundays through May 10th. Cactus Clubhouse is a fun and immersive nature play space for kids 12 and younger. Kids can engage in activities that spark their curiosity for nature and encourage exploration. Also for kids at Desert Botanical Garden, Story Time, going on November 21st and 22nd, then December 5th, 6th, 19th, and 20th. Spark your child's love for nature with engaging stories, songs, and hands-on activities. Designed for children 5 and under and their caregivers, each session offers a playful introduction to the wonders of the natural world. And don't forget about the upcoming annual event at Desert Botanical Garden, Las Noches de las Luminarias. Experience the magic of the season with glowing luminaria paths, sparkling lights, live entertainment, and festive treats. And new this luminaria, Sonoran Santa and Mrs. Claus coming to the garden November 28th through December 23rd at the Pavilion at Sunset Plaza. Snap a festive, complimentary family photo with Sonoran Santa and Mrs. Claus every evening of Luminaria. The dates are November 28th through the 30th, December 5th through the 6th, 12th through the 14th, 18th through the 23rd, and 26th through the 30th. Times 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. Price for adults, members, $40.95, general admission, $45.95. Children members, $19.95. General admission, $21.95. Desert Botanical Garden is located at 1201 North Galvin Parkway in Phoenix. And if you have questions, email contact at dbg.org or visit the admissions box office between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Another upcoming item, the Phoenix Home and Garden 2025 Home Tour. This annual self-guided tour gives attendees an all-access pass to the mountainside manors, urban estates, and palatial retreats featured in the pages of Phoenix Home and Garden. Each home is hand-selected by the magazine's editorial staff, who will be on hand alongside the designers, architects, and owners of each home. VIP perks include early entry and additional tour stops. The tour is scheduled from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. next Saturday, November 15th. Cost ranges from $95 to $137. Multiple Scottsdale locations will be featured. And if you'd like to know more, go to the website phgmag.com. And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know we feature stories each week from the terrific book called Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. This is one of many in the Chicken Soup series, this one devoted entirely to the subject of gardening, and is made up of stories submitted by authors all over the globe, including some New York Times best-selling authors. This story is called Iva May's Birthday. It was written by Nita Waxelman, and there's a quote here from Agatha Christie. One of the luckiest things that can happen to you in life is, I think, to have a happy childhood. Iva May's Birthday. Iva May Maples was the poorest girl in our first grade class, and the thing she looked forward to above all else was her birthday. In 1936, her birthday fell on the third Friday of September, and she had invited us to her birthday party. In all her young life, she'd never had a birthday party before. Not once, she said. Deep into the Great Depression, none of our families had much money. Our panties and dresses were sewn from the cloth of printed muslin flour sacks. Yet all of us, except Iva May, were fortunate enough to have sturdy shoes and socks and warm coats, though many were hand-me-downs or bought second-hand. She wore shoes with holes in them, no socks, and she used one of her mother's cardigan sweaters as a coat. The sleeves were much too long. Even scrunched up as far as they would go, they still covered her hands. which was just as well since she didn't have any mittens either. We all adored Iva May. She wore zinnias tucked into her pigtails. She was funny and adventurous and did outrageous things like bringing a squirrel to school and sneaking it into the teacher's desk drawer, or belching loudly and then looking with total disgust at the unfortunate classmate seated next to her, saying, "Well, I sure hope you all feel better now." Another thing about Iva May, she brought wonderful lunches to school. Her mother raised all sorts of fruits and vegetables in their backyard. They probably would have starved otherwise. What they didn't eat fresh from the garden, Mrs. Maples canned in quart jars. One of the best lunches Iva May brought to school was a thermos of homemade vegetable soup and a piece of buttered cornbread. The soup smelled so good we could hardly stand it. Occasionally, she would give one of us a taste. It was glorious. Finally, the Friday arrived. We were almost as excited as Iva May. Birthday day, party day, ice cream and cake day. Since we were to walk directly over to Iva May's house after school, we arrived that morning carrying our wrapped presents. Our teachers placed them on a shelf in the cloakroom. All day, we noticed Iva May glancing at the gifts every few minutes, eyes shining in anticipation. When school let out at 3, we gathered our gifts and trooped over to Iva May's. There were about 12 of us, laughing and chattering all the way. All except Iva May, that is. She seemed strangely quiet, and the closer we came to her house, the quieter she became. We soon found out why. When 12 noisy little girls spilled through the door into Mrs. Maple's tiny two-room house, giggling and bearing gifts, the poor woman went into shock. Bewildered, she looked at Iva May as if to say, "What is going on here, young lady?" We'd never known Iva May to be meek or shy, but now she squirmed uncomfortably and in a hushed little voice said, "I just decided to have me a birthday party, and I didn't think you'd mind. I plumb forgot to tell you, and..." We all fell silent. Mrs. Maples didn't know about the party. Would she yell? Would she scream? Would she throw us all out and then give Iva May a spanking? Did this mean there would be no ice cream and cake? And wasn't it just like Iva May to pull a stunt like this? "Oh," Mrs. Maples said, clutching her throat. "Oh, oh my. Oh my, my, my." We watched as she struggled with her thoughts and feelings. What would she do next? She looked into the pleading eyes of her daughter. She gave a deep sigh. She rolled her eyes. She shook her head. And then she began to laugh and gave Iva May a big hug. "You're right," she finally said. "It's party time." We looked around. Their sparsely furnished home left plenty of wall space for shelves, which Mrs. Maples had built of old scrap lumber and bricks. And every shelf was laden with home-canned produce from her garden. It was a beautiful sight. Clear glass jars brimming with jewel-toned fruits and vegetables, including dozens of jars of her famous vegetable soup. She knew we expected refreshments, so she made do with what she had. She took 4 quarts of soup from the shelf to warm up. "Now, girls," she said, "please go out to the garden and pick 14 pears and a big bunch of zinnias to decorate the table." We dashed out into the garden. Once outside, I said, "Gee, Iva May, how come your mother wasted garden space on something you can't eat?" I pointed to the zinnias that grew along the entire length of the garden. They were all different colors, bright and pastel. Big flowers, too, some ruffled and some plain. I'd never seen so much beauty in one spot. And even though it was late September, they still looked beautiful. "Oh, those," Iva May said. "Mother says those are food for our souls." Back inside, we snacked on soup and crackers and soon forgot about ice cream and cake. Mrs. Maples arranged the pears on a round platter and wedged a big candle in the center of the plate. Then she lit the candle and we all sang happy birthday. We ate the pears while Iva May opened her gifts. There were paper doll books, a coloring book, some bath salts, hair ribbons, a bottle of hand lotion, 2 pairs of socks, a handmade headscarf, some old maid cards, a puzzle, a yo-yo, and a kaleidoscope. She glowed with joy to have so many new things. Mrs. Maples glowed too. Her little girl was happy. And because she overheard us admiring her zinnias, she gave us each a handful of freshly gathered seed before we left. Plant these next spring, she said, and remember me when you see them bloom. How could I not remember? Even now, 65 years later, I still think of her every time I see zinnias blooming in my garden. I remember her good humor, her sweetness, her creativity, her courage in making do during a hard period in their lives. I remember her showing me that you don't need ice cream and cake to have a great party, and that no gardener is ever too poor to have something to share with others. Perhaps most of all, I remember how I no longer felt that Iva May was the poorest girl in our first grade class. That's called Iva May's Birthday. It was written by Nita Waxelman, one of the many stories that make up chicken soup for the gardener's soul. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week. For Sun Sounds Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Be safe and healthy, and we'll be talking with you soon.